This is your call. Rose Aguilar is out today. I'm Angie Cuero sitting in. In school, it's time for final papers and exams. Now, for some, that means high stress and burnout for students. You can't blame them. For many of them, the pressure to academically succeed starts very young. And by the time they get to college, some of them are combating chronic levels of stress. What if we place the same emphasis on students' well-being that we place on academic achievement? We're talking today about Breathe for Change and its mission to bring mindfulness practices into classrooms. The aim is to benefit both students and educators. So far, Breathe for Change has worked to equip over 15,000 teachers with wellness tools and practices. Breathe for Change founder and CEO Dr. Ilana Nankin joins us today to talk about her vision of a world where we teach students to thrive academically while nurturing their health and well-being. Dr. Nankin is an award-winning entrepreneur, teacher educator, and former pre-K teacher committed to using wellness as a vehicle for healing and social change. She earned degrees in both psychology and education at UC Berkeley and received her PhD in curriculum and instruction at University of Wisconsin. Ilana, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited for this conversation.
Me too. Me too. It's so important because we know that students are under stress. We know that this was compounded by the shutdown and that even before the shutdown, the press to succeed academically. And I can probably safely say in some schools in California more than elsewhere, it's quite a burden for both the teachers and the students. So let's go back to the beginnings of Breathe for Change. You were inspired to start it by research you did for your dissertation. So tell us about that research.
Sure. I'll actually go a little bit further back because it really started with my experience teaching in the classroom, which led to my research. So, you know, as you mentioned, I was a former pre-K teacher. And when I was teaching, I was stressed and overwhelmed and overworked. And that's when I first found yoga and mindfulness and meditation. And it just completely transformed my life and my well-being. So much so that I became inspired to integrate some of these mindful practices into my classroom with my kids and just saw extraordinary, and I mean extraordinary transformations in them, both social, emotionally, but then also academically. And I was like, hold on a second, there is something happening here that needs to be further explored. So that's when I pursued my PhD in curriculum and instruction and became a teacher educator at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. And for my dissertation, I followed a bunch of educators that I had taught in the teacher education program into diverse classrooms all over the country and world. And what I was looking at was how they would take up their ideals of social justice in action in their teaching. But what I ended up finding, interestingly enough, was that these educators who wanted to be in the profession forever, who were so inspired going in, were so stressed, so overwhelmed, so anxious. They were burning out really quickly. And that negative cycle of well-being was deeply impacting their teaching and their ability to really fulfill on the social emotional needs of their students. Mm-hmm. And so as I was seeing how universal, you know, the issue of educator stress and burnout was through my dissertation, I had just graduated from my yoga teacher training. So I became a certified yoga teacher. And the educators I was working with at the time found out I was a yoga teacher and they thought it was like the coolest thing in the world. So they rented out, it was so funny. They went behind my back. They rented out space in the student union for me to teach them yoga every Monday in addition to the education courses I was teaching them on Thursdays. And you don't say no when your students are like, please teach us yoga and meditation. And I was really nervous. I hadn't yet like taught in a studio or I hadn't taught since I graduated, but I was like, I can teach my students. Like, that's okay. Like, it was like this first step. Mm-hmm. And so we started engaging in these yoga and meditation and mindfulness practices together. And then all of them were working in classrooms all over the community. And day after day, they would start coming up to me and say things like, oh my gosh, Ilana, the kids who normally have anxiety attacks before tests are utilizing these breathing techniques that you taught us, and their test scores are improving. Or, you know, students who experience so much trauma in the home are learning how to breathe and regulate their bodies. And everything is getting better, and both in and out of school. And so I was like, oh my gosh. So story came in after story after story after story about how these practices that are seemingly simple and, you know, short little moments of mindful awareness and attention can transform students' and educators' experiences. I was like, okay, I see how universal the issue of educator and student stress is through my research. I knew it through my experience as a teacher. And I also see how powerful these wellness, mindfulness, social emotional learning, and yoga practices can truly be for educators and students' lives. And I was like, all right, world, nothing's going to stop me. I'm starting a movement. It's going to enhance the health and well-being of educators, students, and entire communities everywhere. And that's when Breathe for Change was born. Mm-hmm. And it was in 2015. So it's been almost 10 years now. And that year we started the first mindfulness SEL and yoga teacher training that's specifically for educators who are inspired by this work. And, you know, we certified 34 educators as social emotional learning facilitators and yoga teachers in that first year in Madison. And then we expanded the next year and certified 185 educators across 3 cities, and then 600 across 6 cities, and then 1,100 across 11 cities. And then COVID hit, and we took, you know, we interviewed hundreds of educators and leaders and said, you know, what do you need and how can we help? And it became very clear, like as you mentioned, in the pandemic, all of the stressors were heightened mm-hmm. exponentially. And so, you know, these practices became more critical than ever before for both educators and students. And so we decided to, you know, put on our seatbelts, do everything that we could to like get everything that we had done in person into the online space. And so now we've graduated over 15,000 educators through our accessible mindfulness SEL and yoga teacher training. We also have a master's degree program in transformative teaching and leadership, where we're really equipping leaders, educators and leaders in schools to, you know, have impactful, have such a huge impact. And, you know, it's been 10 years. So now the ripple effects have impacted you.
I want to interrupt you here and get a definition from you, because I'm hearing you use the term SEL. That is what?
Social emotional learning.
Got it. Okay.
So social emotional learning is a very, very major topic in the United States in terms of, you know, we've got academic content that we're teaching our kids, but if we haven't developed the social emotional skills that are required for students to, you know, effectively learn, then we all know what's going to happen. They're not going to get the most out of school, and they're going to probably struggle because they're not able to focus and, you know, regulate their bodies and cultivate presence and have the appropriate energy level for school and ultimately perform in to their highest capacity and reach their full potential. So there's been a big emphasis on, you know, cultivating these social emotional skills like self-awareness and self-management and relationship skills and responsible decision making and social awareness. And that's what I mean by SEL, is helping students and educators really embody those skills within themselves so that they can perform academically at their highest capacity.
Yeah, I really want to give its due to the situation that teachers are dealing with right now. And you alluded to this as well. Let me throw some numbers out there. In terms of the well-being of the educators themselves, the people that we say as a country, that we say we prioritize their health and well-being, we prioritize what happens with our children. But a couple RAND surveys in a row found that teachers are more than twice as likely to suffer stress than any other working adult. 59% of teachers surveyed say they're burnt out, as were 48% of principals. And a third of both those groups plan to leave their job at the end of the current year. It's probably intuitively obvious what the stressors are on teachers, but just in case they're not, where is the most pressure coming for teachers? What is it that they're dealing with that you can help with?
First of all, that is just the statistics are just so devastating, because I think about, it's like, what's the most important thing in the world? It's that our students are being educated and who's educating our students. It's our teachers. And so we need to take care of our teachers. Mm-hmm. What are the stressors that the educators are dealing with? There's a lot, right? Students, it's similar to educators. So many students are experiencing trauma, especially after the pandemic. I mean, more than 2/3 of youth have experienced a traumatic event by the age of 16, and 44% of teens report experiencing persistent sadness or hopelessness, and 21% of children have increased behavioral problems since the pandemic. And mm-hmm. so you can just, even just hearing that, like you, if you have a classroom and, you know, half of them are feeling extreme sadness and hopelessness, and a lot of them have experienced trauma, and likely that's showing up in different behaviors that, you know, all different types of behaviors that are challenging to navigate as educators. And then you have behavioral problems, you know, creeping in that you've never seen before. And as an educator, if you are not equipped with the tools to be able to regulate yourself, then you are going to be reactive to what is showing up, because that is the nature of literally our brains, mm-hmm. right? We have mirror neurons. So like how someone shows up in our space will impact the way we feel, and vice versa. So if educators are dysregulated, then their students are going to be more dysregulated. If they have tools and they're breathing and they're connected to themselves and they take those moments of pause and they model what it's like to, you know, acknowledge their feelings and talk about their feelings versus just react to whatever is happening, mm-hmm. then the students are going to start picking up those behaviors too. And it's a cycle. So whether it's like coming in from the students or maybe the educators dysregulated, there's that cycle. And I called it in my dissertation, that diminishing cycle of well-being. But then there's also the opposite effect of when educators are equipped with the tools and they can teach students how to become more self-aware and regulate themselves and take those deep breaths when they're experiencing challenges. Then we're switching the narrative, and we're giving them replacement behaviors mm-hmm. that they can pull on in moments of stress or challenge that will ultimately bring individuals back to center and to a grounded place, but also it impacts the whole classroom community, and then that ripple effect goes into like the whole school culture. So yeah, I mean, educators are seeing, there's a thing called secondhand trauma. Mm-hmm. Secondhand trauma is when you as an individual may not have experienced, you know, direct trauma, like a traumatic event. But it, let's say in the context of the classroom, many students are coming in with trauma, whether it's because of, you know, poverty or abuse, or, I mean, you name it. We know that there's so many different horrible things that many of our kids are experiencing. And, mm-hmm. and so educators pick that up, and they actually physiologically feel as though they're experiencing the trauma themselves. Again, which points to, if we aren't taking care of our educators and equipping them with really crucial skills and tools to be able to navigate these stressful situations, then it's just going to lead to the stats you showed. They're going to leave.
Right.
You know, they're going to leave. They reach their breaking point. And we've seen so many educators come to Breathe for Change. We interview every single person. They go through an application process. We talk to them on the phone. And so many of them are like, I'm at my breaking point. This is the last straw. I'm going to try this thing. And if it doesn't work, I'm leaving the profession. Mm. And so we get so many people at their breaking point because a lot of educators are there and they're not getting the support and the resources they need to handle the stressors that are showing up in school. Mm-hmm. And what we've seen is that as they move through our training, and you know, we have a transformational curricular progression. So we begin our training with a focus on what we call transformation of self, mm-hmm. which is all about educators prioritizing and cultivating their own well-being before we think about the students, right? They're natural, they're givers. They're going to give and give and give so much of their heart and their soul to their students. But that's why You wouldn't be a teacher if you didn't care about your students. Like, that's why they're here.
Of course, yeah.
But what we see happen, and they come to our training because they want to do better for their students. But what we flip the conversation. We say, you know what? Actually, doing better for your students starts with you taking care of yourself. And that's why we tag on the F to SEL. It spells self.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so critically important for our educators and leaders, and you know, many of us are parents, to embody the wellness practices and social emotional learning competencies that we want to instill in our kids. So, you know, it's this whole shift of them being like, wow, like my mental well-being matters, my physical well-being matters, my emotional well-being matters. Like, how do I nurture that? And then they begin to start that. And then we move into transformation of relationships. And they realize that as they take care of themselves, how they show up in the classroom, their relationships with students, their relationship with colleagues, their relationships with their loved ones at home, like it all improves for the better.
Well, let me take a step back here, because when you talk about individual teachers coming to you, I want to find out from you how much the schools per se are involved. Is it a teacher at a time who come in of their own initiative? Do whole schools or whole districts send their teachers to you? What kind of experience is it for them?
A little bit of both. So we've always been, like from the beginning, we were grassroots. We went directly to the teachers. Mm-hmm. And that's always been our main approach, is like, you know, educators who feel like they need this, come to us. And as we did that, and, you know, individual teachers at schools would have a Breathe for Change certification, and then all of a sudden their principals would be like, what is going on in your classroom? Like, the academics are improving. Like, the students, like, the other teachers are like, they're the other, you know, the next year at school, like, people, like, the teacher who gets the kids from the Breathe for Change teacher is like, oh my gosh, like, these kids are, like, engaging in these mindful practices. They're teaching other kids, like, they're being leaders of our classroom. Like, you know, all of a sudden it becomes, like, known. And then more teachers at the school are talking to that one teacher who went, like, I want to do that thing. And so we see, like, now 10 teachers at the school, or 10 teachers at a school, go through the Breathe for Change training. And then all of a sudden the principal is like, I want to bring Breathe for Change in for professional development. So then our team goes in and leads PD for the whole staff, or like a principal or a superintendent or a district leader, might partner with us to send groups of people across their schools or districts to Breathe for Change, because they have like an initiative to enhance, you know, the well-being of their educators, and to retain their teachers, or to, like, you know, improve mental health or social emotional outcomes for their students. So we literally do both. Mm-hmm. We will always go direct to educators, because we don't want to have to have a school or district approve, because there's a whole process for that. We want it to be accessible to every educator around the world, and that will always be our commitment. But we can have such a greater impact when an entire district sends a bunch of educators. Like, we have a superintendent who actually in Massachusetts, who's the superintendent of the year. Her name's Barbara Malkus, and she was the superintendent of the year in Massachusetts. She was also the president of the Massachusetts Association for Superintendents of Schools. And she actually stumbled across like an ad of ours one day and was like, I want to do this for myself. And so she took the training. She had such a transformational experience that she ended up sending 10 of her teachers across her district to it. Then ever since then, now she's sent 40, and then she sent more to our master's degree program. So like that whole district, we're doing a research study on them now. I mean, there are radical differences in terms of, like, one, educators and their educators' experiences, mm-hmm. of those educators who have these tools versus those who weren't trained. And then also we're looking at, like, academic outcomes and, you know, absenteeism and expulsions and all of those, like, really important data points that district leaders are looking at, and there's drastic differences. And so we see the incredible impact that, like, literally a few moments of mindful movement or a couple breaths or taking a pause to do a two-word check-in, to check in, have people share how they're feeling, and then you could be more responsive to what's going on in the room. All of that ends up improving educational outcomes. And that's why it's like, to me, it's such an obvious answer to some of the biggest stressors that exist. And obviously there's like so many different factors and they're all important, but this piece is one that everybody has access to, and you don't need additional, like, we all are able to breathe. We all have the power to move our bodies in some way, right? Like, these practices can be so transformative for everyone. And all we really need to do is teach people them and start to incorporate them more into our routines. And that has been shown to really improve performance and outcomes for everybody and keep more people in schools, which is what we need. Like, that's the basic, that's a fundamental.
That's bottom line.
You got to have people in schools. And then once you have people in schools, let's make school better. Let's make people enjoy school, educators and students. Let's have them thriving instead of surviving. And that's what these tools are really about.
We're going to take a little break here, and I've got more questions for you about the baby steps that we see in the classroom as these things are introduced one at a time. And we're going to be taking phone calls as well. So let me open up these phones for your questions and comments for Dr. Ilana Nankin. She's founder and CEO of Breathe for Change. And the teacher training that we're talking about translates into mindfulness practices in the schools for the students as well. It would be great to hear about your own practices, what they've done for you. How old were you when you started practicing mindfulness? And what is your take on having young ones practicing in the classroom? If you're a parent or a grandparent, have you worked on this with a child? And what have you seen come back from that child? If you haven't, does the idea appeal to you? And what kind of information would you like from us in this latter part of the show to help you do that? Here's how to participate. Our phone lines are open at 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255. You can also email us yourcall@kalw.org, and we will integrate your questions and comments into the second half of our show, which is coming up right after this. I'm Angie Cuero. This is Your Call. It's Your Call. I'm Angie Cuero. We're talking about Breathe for Change, training teachers to take mindfulness into the classroom. Dr. Ilana Nankin is my guest. And let's talk about the baby steps of bringing this into the room. I'm an eighth grade teacher, and I go in and I work with you and I get my training in mindfulness. I train in yoga. I train in meditation. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. And then I go back to my eighth grade classroom. What are the baby steps to get this introduced into the classroom?
So they're actually very, very simple. I mean, one of the most foundational practices that we teach is called three collective breaths. And we could literally just do it together. You take a deep breath in and a deep breath out, inhale, exhale, breathe in, just out with a sigh. So that's like an example of one practice that you can integrate into your instruction like tomorrow in your eighth grade class. So we talk about what are the different moments that a practice like this would benefit your students. So for example, at the very start of class, your students are walking in, they just came back from chemistry and they're coming into your, you know, language class. And before you're like, okay, let's get started with a day, you're like, hey, let's just take a moment to settle in with three collective breaths and find a comfortable seat. And then you guide them through that practice. It takes like 15, 20 seconds. But what happens in that 15 to 20 seconds is that if they're coming in a dysregulated like mindset or their nervous system is dysregulated, it's taking them from a sympathetic state, that fight, flight, freeze, or fawn, to a parasympathetic state, which is more of that rest and digest place. Now, as you move into that parasympathetic state, you're more calm, you're more focused, you're more attentive, you're going to be way more present for the learning. The anxiety that you might have been feeling 5 seconds before has lessened. Mm-hmm. And so students' ability to engage in the learning is so much bigger when you just literally do three collective breaths. Or you might start class. I sometimes start class by inviting students to rest their hands on their heart or in their lap and just check in with themselves and notice how they feel. Mm-hmm. and to find two words. This is called the two-word check-in at Breathe for Change. Just find two words that describe how you're feeling inside. Or sometimes I say to my kids, like, that describes the vibe of what is happening inside you right now. And then I have everyone share. It takes literally no more than a minute to have everyone share just two words, like excited and hopeful, sad and depressed, inspired, you know, disassociated, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And then as the educator, you have more of a pulse in that moment of what is going on for your students. Is there actually a need to move away from your agenda and check in with them? Is there a need to address a challenge that's happening with students in the moment, or maybe a tragedy that was, you know, that impacted your whole school community? And then if they're all tired, do you do just a moment of mindful movement and then they're energized so that when you get into the content, they're ready to learn it, they're ready to digest it? And so those are a couple examples of just some settle in strategies that you could do. Mm-hmm. You can also think about transitions. Transitions is something that people just don't talk about, but it's so important. You might be moving from one activity to the next, or a journaling to some small group share, or from outside to inside, for example. And using these practices in transition between activities can radically improve their engagement in the next activity. So you might take a moment and just have your students bring their hands to their heart. Inhale, reach your arms up to the sky, and then bring your hands back to your heart, just a few sun breaths like that, or maybe some side stretches or some wrist rolls or wrist stretches if they've been writing for a long time or typing. All of these little moments of like a brain break, so to speak, mm-hmm. can be really instrumental to their engagement and performance in school. So transitions is another piece. Consideration is sometimes you might see your students really tired or seemingly disengaged. That's a great opportunity to bring in, you know, a moment of mindfulness. You might have them just check in with themselves and just follow the rhythm of their breath, mm-hmm. the natural flow of their breath. And then after a few seconds of that, ask them to notice what's shifted for them. They could share it with a partner or just write it down in a journal or like just reflect on it for themselves. Or maybe you get a couple kids or students to raise their hand and share. Mm. And in doing this, in having that moment of reflection after any mindful practice, that is just as important as the practice itself. Whether you're asking them to just check in and notice how they feel and just like do that process internally, or even more importantly, share it with someone, that then increases the buy-in and it helps people realize, wow, this is helpful for me. Mm-hmm. So that later on when they're experiencing stress or some, you know, they're activated in some way that's not supporting their participation in school, then they'll have that moment of awareness. Oh, I've been noticing, you know, I've been checking in with how I'm feeling. How am I feeling? Oh, I'm feeling really mad right now. Oh, let me do that breathing technique that my teacher taught me. Because that's going to help me feel better. And that's that regulation piece or that self-management piece that is so crucial and that I would say is probably the biggest challenge for educators and students in school right now, and which is why we're seeing such behavioral challenges and an increase in that. So, you know, that's another way that you can integrate them. Also, the gratitude is huge. Mm-hmm. We teach a wide range of gratitude practices at Breathe for Change. One of my favorites is called an appreciation circle, which is how I like to close out any learning experience that I've led. So it could be like, you know, my math class, or, you know, a training I'm leading, or my preschool class. It could be like any age, any grade, any subject. And at the very end, if you just take a minute and you say, I'd love to close with an appreciation circle, I'd love to open up space for whoever feels called to just express your gratitude. It could be what you're grateful for about anything. Mm-hmm. Then likely what ends up happening is someone's like, oh, I'm really grateful for my friends in this class, or I'm grateful for that experience that we just shared together. I'm grateful for my health, or I'm grateful for our school community, whatever it is. And then that gratitude, experiencing gratitude, forces us to focus on what is working versus what isn't. And it fundamentally shifts our, like, what's happening in our brain, because it like has the, it's like the neurons are firing together and it's aligning with that more positive perspective versus like the negativity that we may be holding on to. And so that's why I like to leave a class, and you can totally lead an appreciation circle after every single day, any class or any activity that you do. It's another strategy that I find to be really helpful in schools. Another like a gratitude practice could be each kid or student can have a gratitude journal, and they can just write, you know, three things they're grateful for. I have a colleague that I work with, and since 2017, every single morning we message each other three things we're grateful for. And that starts my day in such a positive light. Mm-hmm. And so that's another like example of something that you can weave in. It's just that attitude of gratitude makes a big difference. So, I mean, I could go on forever about a million different strategies, but hopefully those are just a couple of tools that anyone who's listening feels like they can start doing tomorrow.
I want to get to some of our calls. A couple of callers don't want to go on the air, but they wanted to submit their questions. So here we are. The program costs $2,000 to $3,000. Early education teachers only make $3,000 a year. How can they afford it?
So we want, our number one intention is that this is affordable and accessible to educators everywhere. And so we have a ton of financial resources, funding justification letters. We talk, this is why we have calls with everyone, because we want to make sure that whatever each educator is coming in with, we meet them where they're at. So we have a financial assistance, a program that people can apply to if they need that financial assistance. We have a ton of different ways. We also have interest-free payment plans, and we have, like for Teacher Education Week, which is happening just around the corner. We've reduced the training, and we've gotten $200,000 of funding. So, 100 educators can get $2,000 off. So we are doing everything that we possibly can. So it's $999 now, for Teacher Education Week. So there's a lot of different things that we're doing at Breathe for Change to ensure that we don't have to turn anybody away. Mm-hmm. Typically a yoga teacher training is much more expensive than what we've always been, like one of the most accessible programs. And our commitment is that we continuously ensure that we are equitable and accessible in all that we do. So if anyone is listening and funding is a barrier or a challenge for you, do not let funding be a barrier. You can apply, talk to one of our educator development advisors, and we will work with you to make it happen. That's our commitment.
Got it. Okay, let's go to Celine, who's calling in from Marin. Celine, you are on your call. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I was so excited to hear this program because I have a daughter in seventh grade, and she's been experiencing bullying and other awful things. She's also a mixed child of color. And so I'm just, to be honest, a little frustrated because I feel like, you know, the things that you're offering really don't address a lot of the kind of racism inequities that are going on, and that I would see, like, I just recently went on a field trip, and the kind of things going on were just, I mean, terrible and also perhaps typical. And I feel like kids would come in and just completely dismiss a lot of the things that you're saying, because I've seen some of this stuff in action. And so I'm just wondering if there's things beyond, like, gratitude circles and things that honestly sound like platitudes to me, that are just more realistic and addressing really where kids are and the things that they're experiencing, you know, with all the violence, with gun violence, with, you know, protests going on, all these things. So I'm just curious if there's things that really address from a more diverse perspective the idea of mindfulness. So that's pretty much my question.
That's a superb question. Thank you for that.
Superb question. And I resonate. I have two biracial daughters as well. So thank you for sharing. And I'm so sorry she's experiencing that bullying. What you said is absolutely crucial. You cannot just lead in. I gave you some, like, our most simple practices, because that was the question that was asked, how can I do this tomorrow? But in our trainings, everything that we teach is through what we call our teach method, it's an acronym, trauma informed. E is equitable, A is accessible, C is community based, and H is healing center. There is absolutely no way that you can effectively integrate mindfulness and SEL work without thinking about equity and inclusion and diversity. And so in our trainings, we go super deep in all of this. It's a part of the conversation. We have to look at the systemic injustices that are at play, how those dynamics are showing up and impacting individuals in the classroom, groups of people in the classroom, and specific communities. And so, a lot of the deeper work that we do is around facilitating restorative justice practices, engaging in nonviolent communication, addressing, how do you address trauma when it's showing up? How do we address, racism when it shows up in the classroom, drawing on these tools that improve our ability to regulate ourselves to engage in these conversations. So we teach a lot of communication techniques, circle processes, and always, always, always are acknowledging the systemic inequities that are at play and ensuring that we're teaching these in an assets-based versus deficits-based way. Because you could definitely, one of my trainers always says, if you have a nail, you can put a hammer to a nail and you get a great outcome. But if you put, the nail can explode and crack open a window if you're not careful. And so these are just tools, and the context around how you teach the tools. If you don't talk about equity and injustice that's happening, then these tools can actually be really dangerous, just like any other tools. And so in our training, we completely go there, and we have people unpacking their own biases and their identities, the identities of their students and their communities. And how do we navigate these more difficult nuances that show up in schools? And so thank you so much for bringing it up.
Well, in fact, I want to ask Selena, are you getting the information you need there? Are you hearing what you need to hear?
Well, yeah, I'm curious what that looks like in practical terms, because I kind of roll my eyes when I hear gratitude circles and stuff like that, because it really sounds, like a a whitewashed version of, of deep knowledge, and which much of which comes from India, but really I think many indigenous cultures have. So I hear you that it's happening in the training, but I'm just thinking about what on the ground, when I see these eighth grade boys who are imbibing, the toxic masculinity, the racism, in their actions. So I think, talking about it, I hear you, but I'm just wondering, what are the practical ways of applying mindfulness, of integrating, where it's not, the things that, love and light kind of platitudes, that it goes deeper. Because we had mindfulness in our elementary schools, which was wonderful, and it was always, particularly by the woman who led it, really tied to social justice. And she was active in the school in social justice efforts as well. And so I'm just wondering about specific tools and methods that, would really, I don't know, I just, I, I worry about, I think kind of similar to your analogy, I worry about bringing the idea of mindfulness and then it being dismissed. I mean, these are powerful, powerful, deep, ancient, you know, tools. So how are they, how can they be applied in a way that, that really does engage them and challenge them to be mindful? Because that's what I'm interested in.
Ilana, part of what I'm hearing there from Celine, and Celine, tell me if I'm mistranslating you. Part of what I'm hearing there is if you've got eighth grade boys who are taking pleasure in bullying, maybe this is a case of mindfulness can only go so far. Mindfulness can only address so much, because if they're perfectly happy to bully, I don't think taking deep breaths will necessarily make a difference for them.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that. Just to clarify, I'm not suggesting that this would be, a resolve bullying or a direct answer to bullying. I think it's more. That can be addressed, I think, in different ways. I'm really talking about that these kids, you know, not thinking about my daughter and what she's experiencing, which is obviously important, but, you know, this is coming from a place of unrest within themselves. You know, some of it may be hormonal, yep. but a lot of it is societal and maybe due to other things going on in their lives. So I'm more specifically interested in how to, like, outside of the bullying, you know, how to address that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. My initial thought is, like, what's the underlying reason that they're showing up in this way and seeking to understand what's the unrest within themselves? And I think there are practices and, like, facilitated conversations that can help get to that so that they have an awareness. Because ultimately, I don't think there's an awareness there of their impact, or if there is, there's not like a taking responsibility because they're continuing to do a behavior that is not supporting other people. And so if that were happening, I would consider doing like a restorative, like justice process where the people who, there's like a lot of different ways that you could do this, but the idea is that the person who is harmed and the person who did the harming come together, and there's like someone that facilitates that them through a process of sharing about like what happened, why it happened, and helping them really have to own and take responsibility for the impact and understand the impact within like a container. So I think there's that piece, that there's tools around how to communicate once a inappropriate behavior has happened and harm has been done that I think would help in this situation. And that is mindfulness, right? What's happening is they're just going. They're doing the same thing that they've been doing and that they've probably seen other people do. And they're not taking that moment to reflect for themselves. How do I feel about this really? What is happening inside me really that's having me feel like this is necessary for me to do this behavior? Like they're doing it unmindfully. So if we can peel back the layers and really begin to understand probably some pain or suffering that they're experiencing and let them get to that, it can, these peeling back layers like that can slowly change behaviors over time. I've seen this with thousands of different kids and middle schoolers too. Also, I think a lot of this has to do with the relationship between educator and student, or parent and child. Like if you don't have a trusting relationship, then you're not going to be able to effectively teach these skills. So like one of the things is just like, how do you build rapport with students who are experiencing challenges or behaving in ways that are harming other students? And I would start there with the relationship building. Hey, what's going on for you? Can you talk to me about what's happening? And like, with you right now, like, how are you feeling? What's going on? Like, they probably aren't asked these questions or forced to look inside at their emotions. If anything, they're pushing them away, which is showing up. Like, that's why they're behaving in that way. If they recognize that they have a certain emotion and with that experience comes a need and that they're not fulfilling the need for themselves, it's coming out in the behaviors that they're doing. So the more that we can help students become aware of their, how they're feeling, what sensations they're arising in their body, what's going on, and give them the language to be able to do that work for themselves, they will shift their behaviors over time. And so, yeah, it's like both relationships and tools and awareness at the same time. Because I've seen a bunch of woo-woo stuff. Like, that makes me cringe. Like, just thinking, like this one little practice can solve all problems. That is absolutely not what I'm saying.
Right.
I'm saying is these small practices, when done consistently or over an extended period of time, can have significant impact on our own awareness, which then impacts the way we show up in social situations, which impacts our ability to participate more fully for the better in the context of school and outside of school. And so it's really about having people recognize that I am here, this is my experience, and it's not serving me, right? So how do I get, and then what's my vision for myself? Like, with this person who's acting out and bullying your daughter or group of people, I'd want to like have several conversations to understand, like, this is like, what's going on? Why is it going on? Talk to me about it. And like, what's your vision for yourself? How do you want to show up in relationships with your friends? Like, how do you want to show up in school? Help them arrive at their own vision for what thriving looks like for them. Everyone has it within them somewhere.
And
are never asked, right? He's probably been reprimanded so many times that he doesn't believe that that's possible for him.
Celine, thank you so much. That was an intriguing question, and I'm glad we heard the answer to that. I want to talk a little bit about efficacy as we're edging toward the end of the show here, and it's widely accepted. We've seen a ton of studies that practicing mindfulness is a plus for students in terms of health, wellness, and schoolwork. But there are some outliers, and one of those is a very big study called the Myriad Study. 8 years, 28,000 children, 650 teachers, 100 schools, 20 million data points. And what it found is that some of these benefits might be overstated. They compared school-based mindfulness training versus teaching as usual. And what they found was no real comparative difference between the two in terms of children's health, well-being, and especially in how their scores in school, if they were showing any kind of improvement. Some of the problems that they found with that is that kids were exposed to this in school, but there was no follow-up at home. There was a good percentage of the kids who just plain were bored, and they couldn't get beyond their boredom with, breathing or whatever. So are we seeing more research into this? And I found that a really intriguing study, and of course it's in contrast to what we usually hear. So I wondered what your thoughts were on the Myriad study.
Yeah, so I think I could go in a lot of different directions with this. I think there are, just like any category of any intervention, so to speak, mindfulness, social emotional learning, there's a bunch of different other interventions out there. You're going to see things across the spectrum. And I actually believe that some of the curriculum out there around mindfulness or social emotional learning is problematic. Mm-hmm. Educators are handed a scripted, a little script of a practice that they should implement in their teaching. And then they just like read the script. And that to me is like going to fail no matter what. This is not a scripted curriculum. Mm-hmm. And anytime that we see like an intervention where an outsider is coming in or someone is handed something that they have to teach, but they don't actually embody it, believe in it, or like experience the benefits for themselves, mm-hmm. you're not going to see the same results, which is why like we just we see the exact opposite results in our research in that study, and that's because we spend hundreds of hours training educators in how to embody these practices for themselves, how to take care of themselves. And when they show up in that way, it's not about the three collected breaths or the two-word check-in. It's about every single interaction. It's about like the energy that they're bringing into the space. It's about students picking up that, wow, my teacher does this and I can tell because she's changing and she's showing up in a way that's supporting me. So I want to be more like that. So I think there's a really critical point about how it's not just what we teach the students, but it's about the educators living and breathing and embodying what we teach the students. Mm-hmm. That's going to have the long-term effects. And if it's just a simple like mindfulness intervention where everyone's doing one practice over time, if that way of being isn't continuing throughout the whole school day, you aren't going to see the outcomes that we are seeing in our teachers. So I really think that that's why like the focus on the educator or like, you know, in the context of the home, the parents, us doing the work ourselves, that's going to have the biggest ripple effects on our kids because they're going to pick it up and they're going to see us modeling it. They're going to believe it actually works more so than the other piece that I think is really important is when interventions are mandated, there's a different experience as the receiver. If I'm told what to do versus I'm invited, we talk a lot about invitational language at Breathe for Change of like, when I'm not saying like, you have to do this mindfulness practice with me. I'm saying, I invite you to try it on with me and just notice like,
Ilana, I'm so sorry. I have to cut you off because we're up against the top of the hour, but this has been a wonderful hour, and I thank you for it. Savannah Harriman Pote produced today's show. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Thanks for joining us. I'm Angie Coiro. It's your call.